going on, guys? Welcome back to the show. Today we are doing a Q&A episode, so thank you to everybody who asked a question. I only have 28 minutes to do this, so let's see how much we can get done. First question is, what are the big rocks of marathon training? So I'm training for a marathon is already me going down the wrong route here. I'm doing a marathon in, I think, October-ish. So that's probably where this question comes from. Two things I'll say on this. Maybe I'll do a podcast on like what my marathon training looks like, but I'm not going to do something that I would title marathon training until I'm like, you know, 10, 12 weeks out. Until then, I'm just going to be training to be a better runner. So yes, as you're gearing up for a marathon, your programming should absolutely reflect that. And we can talk about what reflect that even means. But more generally, I think people should be focused on the type of training that's going to get them better, that's going to improve them as a runner. Like the difference between elite marathon training, like at the elite level, and elite 5K training is not that much. There was a woman, Hassan, she's Dutch, I should know this. She won gold at the marathon. She, I think, won silver at the 10K, and I think she won bronze at the 5K. Like, that goes to show you that good runners are good runners, that good running programming will help you perform across a multitude of different distances, right? If you look up what elite, you know, if you look up a guy, Jakob Ingebrigtsen, you know, he's like elite 1 and 2 mile running. And you look at what his programming looks like, and then you look up some of these marathon training programs, they're not that different. And so good runners are good runners. And when it comes time to pivot to some, you know, 8 to 12 weeks out or whatever you and your coach decide, it's time to kind of take your physiological characteristics and optimize them for the marathon. What I recommend, I think most people should be doing is, let's say, 2 interval days. And, you know, if you're training 3 days a week, this all depends on how much you're doing, how much you can train and what other things you're doing, but 2 interval days and some form of long, slow run. That is very oversimplified, right? But, you know, I think the long, slow run is almost this like fabled thing that you absolutely must do in marathon training. You got to get out there. You got to do 16 miles this week, then 18 miles, then 20 miles and 22 miles and I don't think that you need to do that. I think it's a smidge overrated, maybe a chat for another time, but I think 2 interval days where you're working between the, you know, 2 to 12 minute intervals, trying to accumulate maybe 20 to 35 working minutes at those paces. So like a 2 by 12 would be 24 minutes of working. You know, 6 by 4 would be 24 minutes, a 5 by 5 would be 25 minutes, getting yourself somewhere in that 20 to 35 minute range. Do 2 of those days and 1 longer day where you're getting out there for, you know, somewhere between 1 and 2 hours programmed in an effective, intelligent way, which might be a conversation for another day. And then if you have more time to train on top of that, I would focus on doing a little bit more low intensity work outside of that. Next question is, I don't want to track food and such anymore. Can I just eat when hungry and stop when not and train hard and I'll keep current physique? I don't know. I have no idea. That's like saying, can I stop keeping a meticulous budget and just spend, you know, when I feel like I need something and stop when I feel like I'm being indulgent and can I keep saving money? It's like, I don't know. If you stop keeping a budget and you start trying to do this, you know, more mindfully, you might lose money. You might underspend. It might work out where you keep spending exactly what you've been spending. And the same thing goes for this situation. Depending on your genetics and your habits and your environment, you know, I have, and what, you know, what's, again, this is in habits, but like what types of food you eat, you know, what sort of foundational habits did you build this whole time that you were tracking? I have no idea. You might, we'll call this eat mindfully, and you might gain weight. You might lose weight. You might stay the same. I have no idea. I do have a podcast titled How to Stop Tracking and Start Eating Mindfully that I think is incredibly helpful for that exact topic. So if you are somebody who's maybe tracked for a while and it's either kind of feels like it's run its course and you want to try and get off it, or it's just not feeling good anymore, mentally, emotionally, whatever, that podcast I think is a really, really great resource for practical tips on how to do that. But more than that, a mindset shift going from tracking your food to not tracking your food. Next question is it possible to have too much stevia? I use it probably 4 to 5 times a day. It is possible to have too much stevia. I do not think at four to five times per day that you're having too much stevia, but it is obviously possible. It's possible to have too much of everything, but as of right now, I don't think there is an established toxic dose for stevia. What is the ADI of stevia? Let me Google this real quick while you're here. Okay, so the ADI is recommended about 4 mg/kg. So ADI is acceptable daily intake. And then just for context, the ADI is usually set at like 1/100th of what we see negative health outcomes in the research. So let's say you have 1 gram of something, or let's say you have 100 grams of something in the research, and that is when we start to see a negative effect. The ADI, or the acceptable daily intake, will be set at 1 gram. So just know that whatever the ADI is an ultra, ultra, ultra conservative. It's not like, oh, if you have any more than that, you're fucked. You know, no, this is a mega conservative number. So the ADI for stevia is about 4 mg/kg. So if you are a 150-pound person, let's say 70 kilograms, I think it's probably 155. So let's say you're 70 kilograms. It's like, you know, 280 milligrams of stevia a day is unlikely, considering how crazy sweet stevia is. It's unlikely that you're going to be consuming that much. So I really wouldn't worry about it. All right, next question. How the hell do you check everyone's form videos in the group? Seriously, it's incredible. The value is mind-blowing. It's my first cycle, but I'm hooked. That's super-duper nice of you. I absolutely love it. It's just part of my job. It's what I offer. So it's how do I do it? I spend the time doing it. I sit down. The first 2 weeks of the cycle, I probably spend like 1 to 2 hours per day checking form videos. And I absolutely love it. I got to tell you, I absolutely love it. Because getting a form video from you tells me that you are working hard, that you care enough about what you're doing to reach out and post this. I know people are sometimes worried that they're posting it publicly and everybody's watching the form videos. I'm the only one who watches these things. Nobody's watching them. We have a separate form video channel outside of our feed that you post these in. They are not in the main feed. So I love going through them. I just spend the time and I do it. It makes me super happy. What I know from doing this for a long time is if I spend the first 10 days of the cycle really spending a lot of time checking form videos, doing a good job, being as helpful as I can, the amount of form videos that come in drops off rapidly. By week 2, there's not a lot of form videos. By week 3, there's not a lot of form videos. By week 4 and 5, almost no form videos. Week 6, basically no form videos. By the way, you can send them whenever you want, but it obviously, if you've been sending them, hopefully you've been making improvements. You've been getting, you know, an affirmation that you're doing it right and you don't have to send it anymore. So I know that if I do that work on the front end, you'll forever have your technique improved and maybe you don't send more in the future. Of course, you are welcome to, but I'm just saying the point is that I'm helping you do it right. Know that you're doing it right, know how to do it right, such that you might not need to send it again in the future. Next question. What's one thing you think most people aren't thinking about or doing when it comes to hybrid training? I don't know if this will directly answer the question, but it is what came to mind first. I think people are overestimating the benefits of zone 2 training. What I mean by that is the benefit of zone 2 training is that you can do a lot of it, right? The benefit of zone 2 training is you could do 20 hours of zone 2. You could do 2 hours a day of zone 2 and you probably wouldn't overtrain, right? So there's a high ceiling for benefit because it's not very fatiguing. But if you're someone training 2 hours a week, let's say you run once or twice a week. You know, one lower intensity day, one higher intensity day is what we do in the group. But you could just as easily say, hey, these should both be interval days because you're not doing that much running. You don't need to choose the type of running that is not fatiguing because you're not doing that much running, right? Like people look at elite runners and they're like, see, they do 80% low intensity. Dude, they're running 100 miles a week. You know, they can't run 100 miles a week running really fast. So what do? They pack their program with as much high quality, higher intensity work as they can handle, which, you know, we've seen in the research, there's only so much higher intensity cardio that you can handle on a weekly basis. And then they're like, well, you know, that's 30 miles. So what am I going to do with the rest of my time? Well, they're going to do as much low intensity running as they can recover from. So I think of myself, right? I train total hours per week, 5 hours a week. And that's lifting and running, by the way. I lift about 100 minutes a week. I run about 3 hours a week. Let's call it 5 hours a week. I do almost no slow running, almost no zone two. I just started doing some longer work, some longer runs. And in those longer runs, of course, you do some slow work, if not the majority of it being slow. But for a very long time, I was doing three interval sessions, two interval sessions and a cross training. I just, listen, zone two running is great. I'm not saying don't do it. But what I am saying is if you are not doing that much, then you don't need to do the thing that's not very fatiguing. Again, I think that I am a conservative coach. I don't want anyone to get injured. I know that there's no timeline. So when I take somebody on, I might begin with some zone two cross training and easing somebody into that higher intensity work. Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. But like the idea that you're going to do 2 to 3 cardio sessions per week and most of it should be low intensity, I think is a bit overstated. Next question is, let's pick one here. Have you looked into the newer Fairlife animal abuse stuff? Trying to figure out if this is on them or only the farms they used. I think I don't want to use anymore. I don't want to support abuse. I have not seen that. I am familiar with the allegations previously. And from what I know, it was more or less resolved. But I have not seen what's come out recently. If you're listening to this and you have seen it, you want to shoot me a message, I absolutely am interested. What I would say, two things. One is I care about this question and I would prefer to support very generally ethically, more ethical and more moral practices on average. Of course. Of course. I do think though, if you choose to eat meat, which I do as of right now, if you choose to eat animal products, like you kind of can't escape the idea that we are like, just, you said, I don't want to support abuse. Like, just think if you eat a lot of animal products, like it's hard to, even if what we're looking at here, which I'm unfamiliar with the claims, but even if it's like, hey, this is really bad stuff. They're doing things just like in a terrible, terrible, terrible abusive way. Totally. I get that. But like, even the people are like, it's regenerative farming and it's, the cows have a great, we're still like breeding them for slaughter for our own benefit. It's not like some, it doesn't all of a sudden become a very like righteous, noble act. So I think you're either, again, this question aside, because I absolutely think that there are levels to this and there would be things that would make me more pissed off and companies that I would support less. Absolutely. I'm just saying philosophically, if you zoom out a little bit, it's probably all not such great stuff. And so I think that there's something I've been, you know, things I've been wrestling with. If nothing else, seeing where I can consume less animal products. And that might be another podcast for another day. But if you've heard about this new Fairlife claims, please send it my way. And I'm going to, after this podcast at some point today, I'll do a little Google. Let me see if I've seen anything about it. Next question. Not going to lie, I came from another group. And it's night and day. You answer every question without being a dick, and the community app looks sick. Wow, super duper nice of you. Sorry, this Q&A was two kind questions here. I appreciate that. I answer every single question. I live in the member feed or our member chat. I absolutely love it in there. The group is my life. I have my one-on-one coaching clients who are my life, and I have my group. You guys are my life, and I love it in there. This is you guys are my people. So. I don't know if that's not how other group programs are run, but this is incredibly important to me. And if you have a question, I'm going to do my best to answer it as thoroughly as possible in a way that helps you. So, thank you. Next question. I'm in a calorie deficit since December. Also tracking my consistency. Okay. In December, 45% of the days hitting calories, I was down 4 pounds. January, 61%, down 5 pounds. February, 71%. 1.4 pounds down. Is this data telling me to decrease calories or can I keep increasing my consistency? I think when you just track consistency, I'm not saying you're only tracking, but that's the only data you've given me. It's possible that doesn't always paint the clearest picture depending on what you mean by consistency. But in any case, I'll assume you just mean, oh, I hit my calories some days and then most days and now even more of the days. I'm going to use that as a proxy for calories, you know, have gone lower. I would say that you can keep increasing your consistency. If when you say inconsistent, you mean higher calories. So if you, if you're eating, so you said if I go up to 80 to 90%, will that work? If before when you were doing 70%, 30% of those days were over your calories, and now only 10 to 20% of those days will be over your calories, then that will be a net decrease in calories. So you can absolutely do that. You can absolutely do that. Do, is that going to be enough to move the needle in the amount that you want? I have no idea, because that, that has to take into account what your expectations are, what sorts of rate of progress would be meaningful to you. I don't know those things. It's also possible that February was just a weird month. Maybe you hit your calories, right? Like, you hitting your calories 71% of the time doesn't necessarily tell me what happened the other 29% of the time, right? Because if 29% of the time you had, you were only over 100 calories, you probably would have lost more weight. But if 29% of the time you were over your target calories by double, then that would make a lot of sense. So this is the risk you run by just tracking consistency, because the other days, there's no kind of grade for how much over your calories you went. But I think it's still reasonable to do this. I'm just saying that, you know, these are sort of like baked in downsides you have to take into account. So can you increase your calories, or your consistency? And do I think that will lead to a net decrease in calories? Almost certainly, unless on those 10 to 20% of the days where you don't hit your calories, you're eating, you know, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 calories, which, you know, again, I don't think that's what's happening. So I suspect that this will work fine. Next question. What's the deal with net carbs? I see those wraps and I'm like, WTF. Cool. Yeah. I think you mean the like Mission Carb Balance wraps. I have a post coming out next week, maybe Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, early next week, that is going to teach you everything you need to know about net carbs. It's going to go through, you know, is net carbs real? Is the calories on the back of the package real? Should you track it like that? Is that fiber real? Is it a replacement for fruits and vegetables? So keep an eye out for that post. I'll give you the TLDR right now, but I really think that that post is going to help a lot of people with this. I will say that, so what net carbs is essentially companies will subtract the fiber content from the total carbohydrates. So dietary fiber is a form of carbohydrate that we don't fully absorb. We don't fully absorb all the calories from, right? So 1 gram of carbohydrate has 4 calories, and dietary fiber is a form of carbohydrate. So you'd say, okay, well, it's 4 calories then. Well, it's not. We don't absorb all the calories from fiber. In some cases, we absorb none of the calories. So what these companies have done is said, well, if our product has 20 grams of carbohydrate, that would be 80 calories. But if 10 grams out of the 20 is fiber, then we can say, well, you're not absorbing those calories. So we're only going to track on the package the net carbohydrate content. So that would be 10 grams of carbohydrate, 20 total grams minus 10 grams of fiber, 10 grams of carbohydrate. It will say 40 calories. I would keep an eye out for that post. I'm not going to read the entire thing out to you now, but some companies are lying to you. What I mean by that is, you do absorb some calories from some fiber sources. From other fiber sources, you absorb no calories. So in some cases, it's a company being totally truthful because they've, you know, put in a type of fiber that we don't absorb at all. So when they subtract all of those calories, they're not actually lying. Other companies, it's a mix. And they say, well, we're not going to bother, you know, discerning what percentage of those calories you do absorb. We're just going to knock out all of them. They are lying, but they're lying a little bit. And then there are other companies that add a type of fiber that we absolutely absorb calories from, and then they wrongly remove all of those calories, and they are lying to you the most. These carb wraps, I'll give you a little spoiler, these carb wraps, they are high in a type of fiber called cellulose, which we don't absorb any or many calories from. So those Mission wraps probably are closer to something like, I think it's 70 calories a wrap. I don't think that that company is lying to you. But as a consumer, what do you do about it? Nothing. You don't worry about it. You just track it like it says on the package. I'm serious. Even if you're off by a little bit, even if they are lying to you, what you need is consistency. You cannot be expected to micromanage the net carbs. You cannot be expected to go and do the math, figure out how many calories it actually is, then go to your tracking app, make the, you know, multiplier reflect the total new calories. You cannot be expected to do that. You need to be consistent with your methods. And if your methods are consistent, your results are reliable, your data is reliable, and that's what really matters. Next question. How should I think about lifting and doing cardio together? That is funny. It's funny. A lot of hybrid training questions, a lot of running questions. What I'll say is don't run a lifting program. Let's say you buy somebody's lifting program. Don't also then go buy a running program and just layer it on top. That's a bad idea. You should get a program that accounts for one another, right? That where the it's written by one person who is combining these things in a logical manner so that you don't do too much and that so you're able to get better at both of them simultaneously. Do not do a lifting program and then go buy a running program. That is a bad idea, right? The second thing I'll say is you should eat. You gotta eat. I have not experienced the type of eating that I would need to do to get to where I'm at right now, cardiovascular training wise. And I don't even run, I mean, I run a good amount, but like, I'm not like a runner who's running like every single day. But if you're going to do this whole hybrid training things, you know, this whole hybrid training thing, you gotta eat. You gotta eat and you gotta eat your carbs. Again, I'm not like, could you survive hybrid training being ketogenic? Absolutely. Just in all likelihood won't feel as good, won't perform as well. Any other tips how to think about lifting and doing cardio together? I would say it's for most people, one of them is slightly more important. And I think that that's, and that, that can change based on the season of life. But I think that that will reflect the way you program this, you know, all the way, you know, from how many days you do each thing to how you organize them throughout the week. So I might get it straight of like, oh, well, I lift weights. I want to be strong and muscular, but I also want to do some running. Or are you someone who really wants to run and do a lot of races and be really fit, but you also want to lift weights? Like, which of those sounds like you? I think that that will help you allocate the limited time you have to train throughout the week, but also help you organize things so that you show up to the thing you care about more ready to perform well. Let's see if we can get two more questions in. Best diet foods on a budget. I don't even know what a diet food is. Yeah, I don't even know. Here's some things that come to mind when I think of cost effectiveness. I think frozen fruits, frozen vegetables. I eat almost exclusively frozen produce. It's either as nutritious or more nutritious because it's picked at the peak ripeness and then frozen right then and there. So it stays, you know, as ripe as possible by the time you eat it. So frozen fruits and vegetables. I'd say ground meat. I'd say opt for the meats that are on sale. You know, don't be picky about which sorts of proteins you're getting. You know, things like Greek yogurt, store brand stuff is probably the way to go. Buying in bulk, shopping at Costco. You know, something like one of the things that saves us some money is we got a rice cooker, and now we just have this gigantic bag of jasmine rice. You know, it's super easy to make in bulk. And also making rice in bulk is really great because reheated cold rice has more resistant starch, and that's really great. But we used to make those like single pack microwave packets, and that was a little bit more expensive. So I think for me, the thing I do that saves me the most money is shopping at Costco and buying mostly frozen fruits and vegetables. You know, reduces food waste. Like, honestly, fruit was something I was not great at eating on time. You know, if I got really ambitious, I'd buy a whole bunch of fruit at the beginning of the week. Yeah, I wouldn't get to all of it and some of it would go bad. But the minute I started buying, you know, frozen, right now Costco has amazing, you know, frozen dark cherries, frozen wild blueberries. They have a great berry medley, frozen mango. They just kill it. Frozen fruit is just awesome. I pop it in the microwave for like a minute and it's good to go. Or I put it in a smoothie and it adds a little bit of texture. So yeah, my go-to is frozen fruits and vegetables for sure. Last question. I've been weighing myself daily since I started this cut, and I had exactly the same weight for 11 days despite 95% adherence, tracking steps, nutrition, progressing in the gym. I will keep going, but I'm a bit discouraged. A couple of things. If you're doing everything perfectly, it's still possible that you're in a deficit. Okay, so what are some things that could be confounding this? If you just started training, so if you just picked up weightlifting again, you will be retaining a ton of water. If you just started creatine, you'd be retaining, you know, some water. But if that's not you, and you have been, like, if you don't lose weight for 11 days, I don't think you're in a deficit. Right? I just don't think you're in a deficit. It's possible you are. It's possible you are. But like in a very linear fashion, every day that goes by where you don't lose weight increases the likelihood that you are not in a deficit, right? If you're like, well, I didn't lose weight for one day. I'm like, I don't know. 2 days, I don't know. 3 days, I'm still not sure. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, every additional day, by the time you get to like 2 weeks, dude, if you haven't lost weight in 2 weeks, you're almost certainly, barring, you know, niche circumstances where maybe you just started lifting weights, you just started taking creatine, and you are losing fat, but you're retaining some water and it's masking that. Or you're going through a very stressful period and you're retaining some water and it's masking that. Or you're having some, you know, premenstrual symptoms. 11 straight days is probably a bit long, but yeah, maybe it's a dysregulated period cycle and you're retaining water longer than normal, or it's a little bit of that and a little bit of the other things. But 11 days of no weight loss, you can start to be pretty sure that whatever you are eating, which includes the 5% you've not been adherent, is not putting you in a calorie deficit. And I don't like telling you that, but like, if you're not losing weight, you're not in a deficit. Over what period of time before you can declare that? There is no objective agreed upon time frame. The only thing we agree upon is the longer you go without losing the weight, the surer you can be that you're not in a cut or you're not in a calorie deficit. Why aren't you? You know, the fact that that's frustrating, what should you do about that? Those are separate thoughts and feelings. I have a podcast titled You Should Be Losing Weight. I think that's the title. This is an absolutely crucial podcast for people to listen to. I would seek it out. I'll put it in the show notes. I think it's called You Should Be Losing Weight, or Tips for People Who Feel Like They Should Be Losing Weight. Absolutely crucial podcast for people to understand that they need to take their own situation into account and spend a little bit less time focusing on what they think should be happening. All right. Thanks for questions, guys. I'll see you in the next one.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Where Optimal Meets Practical. If you liked the episode, it would mean the world to me if you posted a screenshot to your social media or left a 5-star review on iTunes. That stuff really helps. If you ever want to get in touch with me, just shoot me a DM on Instagram @JordanLipsFitness. I'm always around to chat. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.